Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Me'ila Daf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin at the top of Daf Yudches with the Mishnah. Ha'orlo v'kilei ha'kerem mitstafim ze im ze. If you have a combination of orlo, orlo are fruits from a fruit tree before it is 3 years of age. Kilei HaKerem are fruits, specifically grapes, that grew in a vineyard where there was also grains growing. These two are fruits that are forbidden, and they're actually forbidden even to benefit from them. Let us say they fell, a mixture of Orla and Kilei HaKerem fell into a group of allowed fruits. Now, we should just say that, by way of general knowledge, Orla and Kilei HaKerem, each one of them, if they fall into less than 200 times heter, muter fruits, allowed fruits, they will create a prohibition on the entire mixture. So that you need to have 200 times chulin, allowed material, to mevatel Orla or Kilei HaKerem. So let us say you had a measure. In Gemara we often find a measure called a se'ah. Se'ah is the name of a dry measure. Let us say that you had one se'ah of orla that fell into 199 times allowed material, so it would create prohibition. If, however, one se'ah of orla fell into 200 times allowed stuff, so it would be allowed. Let us say you have one se'ah, but you have only half a se'ah of orla, and another half a se'ah of Kilei HaKerem. So you have a complete se'ah, but it's made of these two together. So the same halacha would apply. You would have to have 200 times the se'ah, even though you have, in this example, you would have 200 times the amount of orla by itself, because in this example you only have half a measure of orla. However, orla and Kilei HaKerem will join together, as the Mishnah says, mitstafim zemzeh, they will join together to create an iser if you don't have enough heter to mevatel it. Rabbi Shimon Omer ein mitstaf. Rabbi Shimon, consistent with what he has said in the past, they won't join because they are considered two different items. They have two different names attached to them. Hence, they, being that they're different, they do not join one with the other. The Gemara asks regarding the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, umitzorach Rabbi Shimon litzrufi. Does Rabbi Shimon even need things to join together in order to create a problem in the first place? Rabbi Shimon has a very stringent halacha, as we will see right now in this Tanaic source. V'ha'tanya Rabbi Shimon Omer kol shehu lamakas. When it comes to eating that which is prohibited, even if you eat a morsel of prohibited material, one will be deserving and guilty of receiving lashes. So if a person were to eat, let's say, some horse meat or some orla or Kilei HaKerem, even a morsel of it, it will create a problem. So why do we have to speak about joining together? Tani, so the Gemara answers, Ein tzrichin letzaref. Rabbi Shimon is to be understood, not Ein mitzdarfin, but rather Ein tzrichin letzaref, that even a morsel of these forbidden things are forbidden. However, it might be noteworthy that the issue of a mixture is in fact a different issue. So that if you were dealing with the iser itself, and let us say, for example, that you would have to have, if you weren't dealing with the example we gave before, but an example of eating the material itself, and in order to be considered in violation and guilty of punishment, you would have to have an olive quantity of forbidden stuff. So the Tanakama, the first opinion, would say, well, if you have a half an olive quantity of Orla and a half an olive quantity of Kilei Akerem, and you ate the two together, you would be guilty of Malkus, because they would join together to create prohibition of eating a prohibited substance. According to Rabbi Shimon, you wouldn't have to come to a situation of combining in order to be guilty of receiving a punishment. And hence it says here, Ein Srichim Tzav, you don't have to come on to combination. However, regarding the original example that we had with the mixture, that already would be a different story. Continuing in the Gemara, we have a new Mishnah. This Mishnah deals with fabrics, different kinds of fabrics, and materials and fabrics are potentially, if you have enough of a quantity, enough of a required amount, they will be subject to becoming tome, to mekabel tuma. Each kind of material listed in this Mishnah has its own separate amount for to make it worthy or fit to absorb tuma. Habeged vehasak. Beged is material made of things like cotton, other material items. That is makabel tuma in general. If you have 3 by 3 fingers worth of material, it would makabel tuma. And for other kinds of tuma, for example, for tumas medris, you would have to have 3 by 3 hand breaths of tvachim, of beged, to makabel tuma. Hasak is something, is sackcloth, which is made of goat's hair. That has a larger amount, a larger minimum amount. That's 4 by 4 tvachim in order to makabel tuma. Hasak v'ha'or. Here we're talking about combining fabrics, one with the other. You don't have a full shiur, let's say, of beged, let's say, of woven material, and you would be able to complete the 3 tvachim required for the beged by adding some sackcloth to it, sewing sackcloth together with the beged. So they would join up. Hasak v'or. Or is leather. Leather, which has a shiur of 5 by 5 tvachim, as opposed to the sack, which is 4 by 4. So let's say you had some sackcloth that, let's say, 3 tvachim of sackcloth, and you would add another tefach of leather to it. It would now have 4 tvachim, so it would mekabel tuma. Ha'or v'mapitz. Mapitz is a type of reed mat that requires 5 by 5 tefachim to makabel tuma. So reed mat material, if you had some leather that we said before requires 4 by 4 tefachim, let's say you had less than that, you had 3 by 3 tefachim of leather, and you added a tefach of reed material, making it now 4 by 4 tefachim by adding the reed material to it. Actually, we have to just go over our examples again for the sake of accuracy. We must be more accurate in our examples. The numbers we gave so far have been correct, but with regard to the joining together, the rule is that the more severe material will join up with the lesser severe material. Severity, in our context, is something that will makabel tum with a lesser amount. So that in the first example, habeged v'hasak, the beged is a more intense material in its kabbalah's tumah only at 3 tvachim. Let's say you had less than 3 tvachim of the beged material. So the, let's say you had 2 tvachim of beged material. Or you have beged and sack, and you were lacking for the sack. The sack, we said, was goat's hair material, goat's hair woven together into sackcloth. And we said that's makabel tuma at 4 by 4 tvachim. So if you had missing the 4 tvachim, you had 3 tvachim of sackcloth, and you added a tefach of beged, the more intense material, completing the 4 tvachim required of sackcloth, you would have thing that was makabel tumah, and the sack with the or we said before was makabel tumah 5 by 5 tefachim. So if you had less than 5 tefachim of the or and added 1 tefach of sackcloth to complete 5 tefachim of or, the or would now makabel tumah. And or of a mappets, if you have mappets, we said you require 5 tefachim of that, and if you added, you were lacking 5 tefachim, you had 4 tefachim of mappets and added a tefach of the ore to it, the ore was a more intense material relative to the mappets, they kulon mitstarfim zeim zeh, they would join up. But as we said, the rule is that the more intense material is able to join up with the lesser intense material to complete the required amount. Amar Rabbi Shimon, why is there joining up? After all, we have a rule before that if things have different dimensions, so they don't join up. And here we have an example of things that have different dimensions. How is it that they join up? So Reb Shimon explains, Ma'atam, Nei Shehem Ru'uyin Litame B'moshav. Because in one area, in one realm of Tumah, they are fit to Makabel Tumah at the same dimension. And that area is called Moshav. Moshav has to do with something that a Zav or a Mitzorah would sit on. And in Tumas Moshav, we will see very shortly, they have the same standard. And this is now explained by the Gemara. Tana, Kitzea Mikulon Shloisha, the Oso Mehen Beget. Let's say a person collected fragments of these different materials and sewed them together and made from them a piece of material. So, Lemishkov Shlosha. If you designed we'll call this patch, this combination of the above mentioned materials, and you designed it for Mishkov, meaning, as Rashi says, you had in mind to sew it onto a mattress. Some Mishkov is something that's designed for lying on. So they would join together to form a patch for a mattress, and it would makabel tumah if it had 3 by 3 tefachim in size. Lemoshav, if it was designed for moshav, as another type of tumah, literally something designed for sitting on. So if you designed it for moshav, if the patch that you created would measure a tefach by one hand breadth, so it would makabel tumah. And le'achiza kolshu, if you designed this combination of the above materials for achiza, even if it has a negligible amount, it would makabel tumah. My le'achiza, what is meant by that? Omar Reish Lakish, Omar Rabbi Yanai, Shekein Oymeid Lenavlo. In Navlo has to do with weaving materials on a loom. And in the process of weaving materials, it would be necessary to offer a protection for one's fingers because of the contact with the different threads. This would be a type of material protection to wrap around one's finger. So if you combined the above materials into some type of little piece of fabric to wrap around your finger, that's le'achiza. And it's something that has a function and would thereby makabel tumah, be able to absorb tumah. The masnisa tana, in a Tanaic source, this is presented as follows. Hoyul v'roi l'koytsitze te'enim. The little piece of fabric that we described before as something that's roi le'achiza, people who harvest figs wrap around their finger, around their hands, some small piece of material to protect their hands and or from getting dirty with the sap that oozes from the figs. So therefore the above materials have this situation where they could combine, and since there is a precedent for these materials combining to form something that would makabel tumah, therefore the Mishnah mentions that all of these materials could combine, as we said before, the more intense material to complete the quantity required of the lesser intense material to makabel tumah. The With that, we now begin the new perek, the fifth perek of Maseches Me'ilah. But before we begin, we have a topic heading in the outside margin: Ha'im Me'ilah Tluya Bekach Shehu Nehene Upogeim O Dai Be'echad. The violation of Me'ilah, is it dependent on his receiving benefit, deriving pleasure, or his depreciating the item, or does he need to have both, or is even one enough? In other words, you could have a situation where a person doesn't benefit from the item, he simply rips it or destroys it, that's called depreciates it, but doesn't derive benefit. Does that constitute a me'ilah violation? So the Mishnah says, Hanene min ha'hekdesh shove pruta, afopi shelo pogam mo'al divrei Rabbi Akiva. Person who derives personal benefit from that which was sanctified, and the benefit is worth a pruta, pruta being a minimum amount of money, of value. Even if he doesn't cause any depreciation, he is considered in violation of me'ilah. That's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. V'chachomim omrim, the chomim say differently. Kol davar shiyesh bo pegam lo mo'al ad shif gom. Any item which it's in its normal use experiences depreciation, he is not considered in violation of Mila until he actually causes depreciation. Examples of this will be forthcoming. Another heading under the Chachamim is v'she'en bo pegam, items that in their general use don't experience depreciation. Kevan shinene mo'al, upon receiving benefit, pleasure from it, that already is a me'ilah violation. Ketzad, what's an example of something that doesn't have pegam to it? Nosno katlo betzavoro, person, a woman would take a necklace made of gold that happened to have been sanctified, and she wore it for her own ornamental purposes. Tabas biyada, or a ring that she slips onto her finger that happened to have been sanctified. Shasa b'kos shel zav, or a person drank from a golden cup. Kevan shenehene mo'al, upon receiving pleasure or benefit, there is me'ilah, even though there's no depreciation. A one-time wearing of a golden ring or golden necklace, that nothing happens to the gold, or taking a drink from a golden goblet, there is no, the gold doesn't depreciate as a result of that. Therefore, it's classified as something that's ein bo pegam. Therefore, me'ilah will be a me'ilah violation upon receiving a pruta's worth of benefit. The Mishnah goes on with examples that do have pegam to them, that in their normal use there is depreciation. Lovash becholok, a person put on this garment. Garments, by their every time you use it, there is some level of wear and tear that goes on the garment. Hence, it's something that is considered dover shiyesh bo pegam. Kisa betalis, he wrapped himself in a talis, a type of cloak. Bikea bekardom, he used a hatchet for chopping. And all of these items, of course, we're dealing with items that had been sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash. Lo mo'al ad shiv gom, there is no mila unless there is depreciation to the tune of a pruta. So that if it can be ascertained that by putting on this sanctified garment for 5 minutes and then taking it off, there may be depreciation, but it's less than a pruta in value, there would be no mi'ilah violation, even though the person may have experienced hana, pleasure from it. But since the pagam, the required amount of depreciation didn't take place, so there would be no mi'ilah violation. Hanene min hachatos, a person who derives personal benefit from a sin offering. Kishi chaya, when the animal is alive, it hasn't been slaughtered, it's an animal that's been sanctified as a sin offering and it's standing there alive, lo mo'al ad shifgom. There is no mi'ilo violation unless you create a depreciation. Kishi mesa, when it's dead, if it died, if you have a carcass of a korban chatos, of an animal that had been designated as a sin offering, kevon shenehene mo'al, upon receiving benefit from it, there is mi'ilah, there's a mi'ilah violation. Tana, a Tanaic source tells us, moide Rabbi Kiva l'chachomim, b'dovar shiyesh bo pegam. Rabbi Kiva will concede to the Chachamim that mere pleasure alone will not cause mi'ilah if you're dealing with something that has depreciation in its normal course of use. Well, that having been said, one would stop to think then what's the difference between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim in the first place. We saw Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim in the Mishnah appearing to argue with one another. According to this Tanaic source, Rabbi Kiva seems to agree with the parameters laid down by the Chachamim in the Mishnah. So the Gemara asks, "B'mai komifligi?" What is the point or an example in which we can see a point of controversy? Omar Rava. He gives us two examples. Bilavush mitzio umalmilo. Let's look at the Rashi to appreciate this. These examples. Omar Rava, bilavush mitzio. We're reading now in the Rashi. The lo lovish le mibachutz legamri. It's not an external type garment. It's not an overcoat. The malbush achitzon pogam la'alter. External garments experience depreciation immediately. For lo legamri mibifnim somuch lebusaro. And it's not some type of undergarment either. Dahu nami pogim lauter she mischakech babosar. It has contact with one's flesh, and therefore it experiences immediate depreciation. Elo belavush lovish beintayim. This lavush mitzio is a type of garment that one wears between the undergarments and the outer garment. Bein malbush elyon ubein hatachton she'eno nivgam ad zman ruba. It doesn't experience depreciation until a long period of time lapses. Umalmala, Rashi explains based on the Gemara Gittin, it's a very, very fine, thin type of fabric that an entire garment that would cover a person could be folded up into the size of a nut. It's a very, very expensive type of fabric, by the way. Person would wear this maybe once a year. And they, as a result of its great expense, people take very good care of it, that nothing should happen to it. And as a result of its rare use, Rashi explains, we've dashed underlined this in the Rashi, the Ein Bo Pagam Ad Zman Meruba. It doesn't experience depreciation until a long period of time goes by. All of that is background. So what's the point of controversy? So we look in the Rashi. You'll notice we have diamonds in the Rashi. So at that point, we'll read in the Rashi, Bo Pligi Rabbi Akiva Sovar. Rabbi Akiva holds, Hoyol v'havu dvorim she'enon nivgomim la'alter. Since these are items, this levush mitzio and the malmula, are things that don't experience depreciation immediately. Afagav the pagmi lachar zman, even though they do experience depreciation after a long period of time. Kevan delo pagmi lauter, since they don't depreciate immediately. Have kedover she'ein bo pagam, it is like something. It's to be classified as something that has, that doesn't depreciate. The moyolin boy kevan shenene mimenu keshover pruto afagav delo pagam. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva will take the, we'll call it the more stringent opinion, that upon simple benefit from it, to the tune of a pruta's worth of benefit, even if there's no depreciation, there will be me'ilah in these items. The Rabbanon savri hoyol v'yesh bo pagam mikol makom lo mo'al ad shifgom. The Rabbanon hold that they do show depreciation, but only after a long period of time, So they will say there is no mi'ila until one actually causes a shove pruta's worth of depreciation. The Gemara continues with a Tanaic source. We have to note here, this is somewhat unusual, but this is a very long Tanaic source textually. It goes until Daf Yud Tes Omen Aleph. So that, as far as our markings are concerned, you'll notice that we have a frame that goes from here, and the closing of the frame is on the top of Daf Yud Tes Omen Aleph. The Tanaic source opens up with a word from a pasuk, and it's important for us to familiarize ourselves with this particular pasuk. So we've included it on the side of your Gemara. You can see we've written in Vayikra Perek Hei Pasuk Tes Vav. The pasuk reads, before we go into the Gemara, Nefesh ki sim oil mal v'chot'o b'shgoga mikodshe Hashem, a person who mistakenly uses and benefits from something sanctified, ve'vi es ashamoi l'Hashem. In this pasuk, we see an expression, a double expression, ki tim'ol ma'al. That's a double appearance of the word mi'ila. That will have significance for us as we go on. So now the Gemara. Nefesh. The word nefesh indicates a person, echad hayochid ve'echad hanosi ve'echad hamoshiach, whether it be a private individual, a king, or a kohen gadol. Moshiach is the anointed kohen gadol. Ki simo ma'al. Ein ma'al elo shinui. The word ma'al literally means a change. V'chenu omer. And here the source goes on to show precedent for the word ma'al having to do with change. The use of these triangle shapes are explained in the outside margin under the Mivneh heading. You can see we have a triangle featured, and we've written Litzor Kesher to create a connection Bein HaNemar Kan VaGemara B'daf Yud Tes Omen Aleph. These triangles will then be connected with information that appears on Daf Yud Tes Omen Aleph, so that if you happen to have a Daf Yud Tes available, you will notice triangles that appear there, and they highlight the words Lesota, Lavudis Kechavim, and Letruma. And those are the topics that are alluded to right now in this Tanaic source. So it says, V'chenu Omer, our Gemara says that it says in the Parsha of Sota. Sota has to do with a married woman that is suspect of conducting herself immorally with another man other than her husband. The Pasuk says, Ish ish ki siste ishtoi umu'alo boi ma'al. The Tosfos explains, we have a little star directing your attention to the bottom of the lower part of the Tosfos commentary. And there Tosfos says, Umaisi raya misoito, shehi oisa shinui. The sota, this suspect woman, is conducting herself in a change. What do we mean? Shamanachas balo, she's leaving aside her husband, midabekes benoyev shelo shuhu chulin uginai law, and she's attaching herself to another man, to the to her paramour. That's her, we'll call her lover, and that's a change. She is the normal relationship is between the woman, the married woman, and the husband to whom she's wedded, not some other man. So that's considered a change. The Omer, and it says in the context of idolatry, Vayim Alu Beloke Avosehem Vayiznu Achrei Habailim. The Jewish people are expected to follow the Almighty, the Ribbono Shel Olam. And here the Pasuk is describing their changing their practice and following idols. Yochol, now here the source raises a question. Yochol pogam v'lo nehene. Is there mi'ila if a person causes depreciation without benefiting? O nehene v'lo pogam. Or benefits without creating depreciation? Uva mechuba l'karka. Is there mi'ila with benefiting from something that's part of the ground, that's attached to the ground? U'beshliach shosa shlichuso, would an agent, someone who is sent on a mission, who performs the instructions of the one who sent him, and in this particular phrase, we're alluding to a case of someone, Mr. A, sent Mr. B on a mission to use some sanctified funds for purchasing something. So would the agent who was sent on this mission and who performs that which he was sent out to do, would he, the agent, be considered in violation of Mi'ilah? And as opposed to the one who sent him? So Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, V'chot'a, ne'mar chet b'truma, v'ne'mar chet b'mi'ilah. Here we have a word comparison. And the triangle here is to highlight the topic of truma. You see in the topic of truma the word chet, and the word chet in our topic of mi'ilah. And ma chet ha'omor b'truma, just like in the case of truma, truma is the tithe of produce given to a kohen. There is a prohibition for a non-kohen to benefit from truma, to eat truma. So we learn from the topic of truma 6 points that will be applicable to the topic of mi'ilah as well. And you can see that there's some additional markings that appear in this source. If we look in the outside margin under the Nosei Mivneh, we have the following quote from the source, Ma chet ha'omor b'truma, af chet ha'omor b'me'ilah. So that we'll double underlining the expressions ha'omor b'truma and ha'omor b'me'ilah. And our note goes on to say, Shisha dvorim hanil modim mitruma, b'gzera shava. There are 6 points that are learned from the topic of truma through a word comparison of chet, le'me'ilah, to the topic of illegal personal benefit from sanctified items. Bahem Sheikh, in the continuation of this source, Abraiso Yodun Bidvorim Shiesh Bimeila V'ein Bitruma. There will be aspects that Me'ila has that are not common to Truma, Vishal Minayan, and we'll ask, well, from where will we know to go beyond that which is characteristic of Truma? Meaning that in the meantime, we have a word comparison linking mi'ilah to truma. If we find later that we go beyond the boundaries that are set down by the truma example, we'll have to ask, well, where do you know that? How do you know that mi'ilah goes beyond? Ubekach yofiu hasimunim, the following symbols will appear later in the source, the diamond where it surrounds the expression ima chet ha'omur betruma. The expression ha'omur betruma is double underlined with dots in it, whereby, as we said before, at that later point, later in the source, where we'll be going beyond the boundaries set down by truma and asking each time, how do you know that is the case? So in the meantime, let us see what are the 6 items or 6 parameters that are set down by the case of truma. So the Gemara, the Braisa goes on to say, "Ma chet homo b'truma pogem v'nehne." Truma is are fruits and vegetables. Pogem is the depreciation. What happens? How do you cause depreciation? Well, by eating it. The depreciation that causes guilt in the case of truma is through eating of it. So there is a pogem and nene, so one destroys the fruit in the course of his eating of it and benefits. Umi shepogam nene, the one who causes the depreciation is the one who is benefiting. Ubedavar shepogem bo nene, and the item that is being depreciated is the cause of the benefit. Upekimoso vanoso keechod, while the depreciation is taking place, because the term pogam betruma means the eating, so that the eating and the pleasure come about at the same time. Ubetolosh minakarka, truma is something that is detached from the ground, and ubeshliach shalso shlichuso, the separation of the truma can take place through agency. So that if you sent someone to tithe and he does the tithing, it's considered it's considered as if the owner did the tithing. So that when the owner of the fruit sends someone to tithe, then it's done with the knowledge of the owner, then it's considered a legitimate truma. So now that we've seen the different aspects of truma, the different legal aspects of truma, we now carry this over to the realm of sanctified items. Af chet ha'omor b'me'ila. So too, the chet in the context of me'ila tells us pogem v'nehne, the me'ila guilt is when there is depreciation and also benefit, not just mere ruination of something. Umi shepogam nene, and the one who causes the depreciation also experiences the pleasure. Ubedavar shepogam bo nene, the item that has been depreciated is the item through which the pleasure is experienced. Upegimoso vahanoso keechod, the depreciation and the benefit is happening at the same time. Ubetolush minakarka, and meila is to be is a violation regarding something detached from the ground. Ubeshliach shosa shlichuso, and the owner will be considered in violation only if the agent carries out his request. So if the shliach, the agent, carries out his mission, so then the owner who had sent him to, as we said, to use or to spend the sanctified funds, then the owner is considered in violation of me'ilah. This should be noted, by the way, that this is an exceptional case. In general, there's a concept, ein shliach lidvar avera. If Mr. A tells Mr. B, I want you to go out and rob a bank. So the thief, the one who actually does the theft, is guilty of thievery, not the one who sent him. There's in general a concept of divrei harav, divrei atamid, divrei mishomin. You have the Almighty commanded not to do certain things, and you have a mortal that commands someone to do certain things. One is expected to listen to the Almighty's commandments and not the mortal's commandments. And hence, if someone doesn't listen to the Almighty and his teachings of the Torah, and he listens to some mortal that is inciting him to commit an offense, there is no shlichus. The institution of agency doesn't apply, and hence the shaliach himself is considered the violator. This example of mi'ilah is an exception, and it's based on this comparison to truma, that here agency does operate if the agent, if the shliach, did what he was told to do, namely to misappropriate something that had been sanctified. If he was sent on such a mission, the sender, the one who sent him to do it, is considered in violation of mi'ilah. We continue now in the Tanaic source, Ein li ela oichel venene. If I limit myself to a truma comparison, then I would say that mi'ila is only in a case of someone who eats and benefits, because that's how one violates truma, through eating and benefiting and experiencing pleasure. Minayin, from where would I know, achiloso v'achilas chavero? And actually, this question goes on a few lines. There will be four points that will be asked here, and we've numbered them through letters, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet. How do I know that if, let us say, someone took a pruta's worth of sanctified food, and the person himself ate half a pruta worth of it, and he gave the other half pruta value of food item, and he fed it to someone else. Hanayoso v'hanoyas chavero. If you're, let us say, dealing with something that gives pleasure, and you experienced a half pruta worth of pleasure and caused someone else to receive a half pruta worth of pleasure. Hanayoso v'achilas chavero. Or you experienced pleasure and of half pruta's worth of pleasure and fed a half pruta's worth of sanctified item to someone else. For example, you took some pruta's worth of sanctified oil and you rubbed it a half prutas worth on yourself, that's pleasure, and you fed the other half prutas worth of oil to someone else, or the other way around, achiloso vanoes chavero, shemitstarfim zeimze, all of these examples of half prutas, two half prutas, meaning a full pruta experience between two people, how do we know that that would join up to create a mi'ila violation? Afilu lizman merubo, even over a long period of time, meaning one half pruta's benefit was in the morning and the other half pruta's benefit was before sundown of the same day. From where do I know that they would join up to create a mi'ila violation? Tamulomar tim'ul ma'al mikomokom. Here you see the double expression that we alluded, that we made a reference to before in the pasuk. Comes this double expression comes to include these cases. However, we have to bear in mind that up till now we had this impression that we learned mi'ilah from truma. Therefore, the following diamonds introduces a question to see if we are in fact going to limit Me'ila to Truma, or maybe go beyond. Ima chet homor betruma, lo tsiref, shte achilos ke'echod. Af chet homor be'me'ila, lo tsiref, shte achilos ke'echod. If by Truma we don't say that one would be guilty, let us say if he ate a half quantity, half minimum quantity today and a half minimum quantity tomorrow, the next day. In the case of Truma, they wouldn't join together to create a liability or guilt on one who did such a thing. Minayin, from where do I know in the realm of Me'ila, Ochal Hayoim v'Ochal Lamochar, Vafilu Lizman Meruba, let us say a person ate half a pruta of sanctified food today, and even a long time later, the expression Lizman Meruba, as opposed to before, will mean even many days later. How do I know that they join up? Talmud Lomar, Timo Mal, Mikomakom. This double expression then shows us that in the case of Mila, we go beyond the boundaries laid down by Truma. To review, in the case of Truma, if, let us say, the minimum amount of Truma is a pruta's worth of Truma in order to be considered in violation, so if he ate half a quantity of Truma today and another half pruta worth the next day, he wouldn't be considered in violation of Truma, requiring him to pay the principal and a fifth, which is characteristic of the violation of Truma. Nevertheless, if one did the same thing, half pruta of hektish today, of sanctified food today, and another half pruta's worth of sanctified food a few days from now, they would join together. And that we learn from the double expression of Timo Mal. Another question. Ima chet ha'omur betruma, pegimoso vahanoso ke'echod. By truma, we say that the depreciation and the pleasure happen simultaneously. That's true by truma. Minayin, how do I know? La'achiloso v'achilas chavero, v'afilu mikan v'ad sholosh shonim minayin. How do I know in the realm of mi'ila that two people who to create the depreciation through their eating, that one person eats today a half pruta, and 3 years later that individual feeds another half pruta to someone else. How do I know that in the case of Mila that will be guilty? Tamalomar timol mal likomakom. In other words, here's another example of where we go with Mila, we go beyond that which would have been considered guilty in the case of Truma. Another question: Ima chet ha'omor betruma ad shi'etze min hakodesh l'chol. In the case of truma, When is their violation? By a person taking that which was designed as truma and using it for his own benefit by eating it. That's considered removing it from its sanctified category, its level of sanctity, and then using it for yourself. How about in the case of Mi'ilah? In the case of Mi'ilah, min ha-kodesh le-kodesh, let us say a person took funds that were sanctified for the Bedek HaBayis, let's say, for the temple repair fund. And he used those funds for the purchase of sacrifices. And here we have a bracketed section which gives which presents a couple of examples. If we just skip this bracketed section for a moment, the question then that we had read was min ha-kodesh le-kodesh, and we skip the brackets, you see minayin. The bracket length indicator helps you find where the brackets end. To the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, there's a vertical dash dotted line showing you the lines at which the bracket begins and ends. So that the question right now is, if we just read it again from the top line of Daf Yud Tes Omer Aleph, min ha-kodesh le-kodesh minayin. How do I know that in Mi'ilah, a lateral movement from one realm of Kedusha, of sanctity, to another realm of sanctity is considered a Mi'ilah violation? In the realm of sanctity, one is supposed to limit himself to that for which it was earmarked. So how do I know that? And the Braisa will answer, again, with the Pasuk, the double expression, Timol Mal. But in the brackets, we have some examples of what Min HaKodesh LeKodesh is. Kegoin, on the second line from the top, Kegoin, what is an example of Min HaKodesh LeKodesh? Lokach Kinei Zavim, V'Kinei Zavos, a person took money that had been sanctified, and he bought with them a bird offering for a Zav. A Zav is a person who had experienced a certain type of Tumah and needs to bring a bird offering. Kinei Zavos, likewise, bird offerings for a woman who experienced the Ziva Tumah. The Kinei Yodos, those are birds that are purchased by a woman who had given birth. The Shaklu Shiklo, or he took sanctified money and money that had been sanctified for some type of, some specific purpose, and used it for his Machsis HaShekel obligation, which is an obligation that everyone has once a year to contribute to the Trumas HaLishka, to the temple treasury, a half shekel. And he used sanctified funds for that. Vehevi Chatoso, Vashomo, Upischo. Or a person bought his sin offering, or Osham sacrifice, or Pesach sacrifice from sanctified funds. Kevon Shehoitzi Moal, Divrei Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Shimon, at the point that the purchase is made, that is considered the Mi'ilah. That's the violation. At that point, there is violation. Rabbi Huda Omer Ad Shizro Kadam. There is a point that Rashi goes on, elaborates on this. We have a dashed underlined section of Rashi, four lines from the top, where Rashi says, "V'kevon shehevi lazora mo'al divrei Rabbi Shimon." Rabbi Shimon says that in these cases of the purchase of sacrifices, at the point he brings the sacrifice to the Beis Hamikdash, that the sacrifice that he bought with sanctified funds, at that point he's guilty of Mi'ilah. The Kosovar demanded Mechayev Chatas O'Oshem Le'olam Hu Chayev Bachar Yuso. Anyone in general who has a Chatas or Oshem obligation, he is considered responsible to make good on it, to replace it if anything happens, until he brings it to the Azora, until he brings it to the temple courtyard. The Kevin Shevio, once he brings it to the Beis Hamikdash, to the Azora of the Beis Hamikdash, Niftar Miachriso. At that point, he becomes relieved from his obligation. Av Hainami, the Motzi Mikodesh Lekodesh. So too, in our example of the misappropriation of holy funds and using them inappropriately for buying a sacrifice. Kevin Shavil Azora V'yotzi Yidei Chovaso, upon his bringing it to the temple courtyard and thereby fulfilling his chatos obligation, and thereby now no longer having to bear responsibility. That's Yotzi Yidei Chovosu V'Yidei Achrayus Mo'al. That's the nail in the coffin, so to speak. And now he's considered guilty. In other words, at the time he completes his chatos obligation, we can now say he's completed the misappropriation of the funds. In other words, not like we explained before that it's at the point of purchase alone, but it's the point he's now received or fulfilled his personal obligations with regard to that particular sacrifice. Rabbi Yehuda, he goes further, or he says that the point that Me'ilo's experience is at the point that the blood is sprinkled of the korban, of the sacrifice. That's it's with the because according to Yehuda, a person is duty bound if anything should happen to his schatas, his sin offering or osham offering, before the blood is sprinkled, he'll have to make good on it. So he's not considered having completed his sacrificial obligations until the blood is sprinkled. So all of that having been said, we're dealing right now with the issue of misappropriation of funds that have been sanctified, but keeping them within the general realm of sanctity. Nevertheless, it's a misappropriation of earmarked holy funds. So the Bryce is asking me, from where do I know that would constitute me'ila? And this is going beyond the realm of truma. Truma, we know it's only where you take the truma and use it for your, and you take it from the realm of truma and use it for your own benefit. That's when there is violation. Here, even if you're not using it for your own personal benefit per se, there is also violation. So from where do we know that? Talmud Lomar Tim Oil Ma'al Mikomakom. The double expression, again, in the realm of Mila, shows us how far the Mi'ilah violation actually goes. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.